what the body does. And again, that's sort of hard to understand for most of us. How can you not be concerned with what the body does when I appear to be the body? When you appear to be the body, is right. The appearance is that you're the body, but you're not. And as you stop reacting to conditions, as you work on yourself, as you do the sadhanas you're supposed to do, the time comes when you can actually know that you are not the body. Your body will do something, whatever it has to do. You'll be poor or rich, sick or healthy, involved in a war or not involved in a war. Whatever your body does, it will not concern you. That sounds logical, but it's the ultimate truth. Now perhaps you can see why great saints who were dying from all kinds of diseases couldn't care less. They weren't putting it on. They weren't making out, I'm not going to feel this, I don't care. They actually were not the body. The average person will say, but Robert, I saw the body deteriorating. I saw the body wasting away. I saw the body dying. That's it. You saw the body. Where are you coming from? What you see is determined by where you're coming from. As an example, when you were in the third grade in school, certain things used to disturb you. But now you grew up, and you laugh at those things. In the same way, as you become spiritually inclined, and you spiral upwards towards freedom and liberation, things concern you less and less. Therefore, you can tell where you are by the amount of things which concern you. The more you're concerned, the bigger the ego. You have to do the work. And what is the work? It starts as soon as you open your eyes in the morning. As soon as you wake up, you immediately start working on yourself then. You do not wait until a catastrophe comes. Do not wait until some calamity hits you and then you say, I've got to pray. I was watching CNN this morning, and they were interviewing some guy, I don't know where he was from, some Arab. And the newscaster said, aren't you going to pray to Allah? So he said, I don't think I'm going to pray at all anymore, I'm getting the hell out of here. And that's the usual attitude. If we don't, quote, pray during the times we don't need to pray, we will not be able to pray when the time comes when we have to pray. What this means to us is, if we do not develop a high consciousness, when there is no need to. Do not believe you're going to develop one when you need to. Some people believe, well, when I die, I'll be free. So I can't wait to die. That's the wrong conclusion. If you do not become free before you're going to die, you will not be free after. We all know the way it works. When you leave your body, it appears that you take a short vacation. And you meet all your old relatives and do all kinds of strange things. But then your karma pulls you back into a body. And you continue where you left off. And that's the game Ishwara plays with you. But it may sound like a lie, and it is a lie. But it's the truth for most of us. Most people think they're really spiritually advanced. And they have transcended the karma by saying, I don't believe in it. But look at the way you react to things. You can tell if you're free of karma by the way you react to conditions. I'm not talking about putting it on. In other words, when a condition hits you, like your house burns down, or someone steals your car, and then you say, I'm not supposed to react. Well, you're burning up inside. That's no good. If you worked on yourself from years back, then if your house burns down, you can smile. Then if someone steals your car, you can bless them and let it go. And you will not have one iota of disturbance. So you can tell where you are by the way you react to conditions. Look at yourself. Where are you coming from? Do not fool yourself. Life is short. If you do not find yourself in this life, of course you will have an opportunity to do it again. But you may come back deluded, and you'll have to climb the ladder again and again and again until something happens where you say to yourself, my spiritual practices are more important than anything else in this life. It's going to be first for me. Before marriage, before wealth, before owning property, before of anything, your spiritual life comes first. If you feel like that now, you're way ahead of the game. But if you have something else in your mind that you think is more important, then you've got a long way to go. You know where you're coming from. You can fool some of the people some of the time, but you've got to look at yourself and see where you're coming from. Sunday, we were talking about certain people that had become self-realized. I don't know how this message gets around. But I get phone calls from people who don't even come to the meeting. You didn't know what I was talking about. So I received a phone call from this person who tells me, Robert, I'm one of the enlightened people of the world.
That's good.
So I said, really, how do you know? He tells me, well, here's what happened. I went to the beach last week, Santa Monica, and I was sitting in meditation. All of a sudden, I left my body. And I saw myself soaring through the air. I visited three different planets. And then I came back again, and I found myself in my room. I tried to walk through the wall and I couldn't do it. So my question is, Robert, how come a self-realized guy like me can't walk through the wall? So I paused for a moment and I said, my suggestion to you is you go back to Santa Monica and find your body before it's thrown away. And you have to pay a heavy fine. And get back into your body and keep meditating. And he hung up. Then I received another call from a lady who again told me how self-realized she was. So I said, how do you know? She tells me, well, her husband used to abuse her verbally for many years. In the last 6 months, she stopped reacting. So when he started to verbally abuse her, she'd whistle a song. We're not paying attention. Well, what happened is her husband left her. And she said, now I want my husband back. What can I do to get him back? Can I burn certain candles? Recite certain incantations? So I told her to go see a marriage counselor. The interesting part about this is that these people really think they're self-realized. This is something you have to understand. You can never become self-realized. You represent the ego. When a person voices to me, I am self-realized, I immediately know they don't know what they're talking about. Because there's no I left to be self-realized. As long as you're referring to your ego self as being self-realized, you're mistaken. The ego can never become self-realized. Your body can never become self-realized. There is no thing in you that can become self-realized. Self-realization is your very nature. Illumination is what you are. When you voice it, you are not that at all. Think for a moment what you're saying when you say, I think I'm self-realized. How can I think I'm self-realized? There's no one left when you become self-realized. There's no one left to make that statement. A person who has achieved freedom keeps silent. They usually have nothing to say. Always remember that. Another thing to remember is a self-realized person does not disobey the Dharma. There are many people who I've spoken to all over the world that have told me, now that I'm self-realized, I can do anything I want. This is a big mistake. What has happened to these people is that their ego is more inflated than ever. To an extent, to do anything you want is true. For a self-realized person no longer is under the law of karma. They have transcended everything. But they cannot possibly hurt anybody. It's virtually impossible for an awakened being to virtually hurt anyone. There's always loving kindness in everything they do. They will not walk around saying, I have awakened, I can do this and I can do that, it doesn't matter what I do. Acting like this pulls you deeper into karma and into samsara. Again, you become self-realized, you develop compassion. You become the epitome of compassion, of love, of loving kindness. But those are not human traits. That's why talking is confusing. You do not have a compassion to where you think compassion is. For instance, in the story of Arjuna and Krishna, the Bhagavad Gita, I'm sure you're all familiar with the story. Arjuna became despondent. And he wanted to break his sword and not fight. Just to make the story succinct, not go into detail so much. But Krishna advised him to fight. And Arjuna didn't understand this. He believed that Krishna was compassionate, loving. How could he tell him to fight? Well, to fight was part of his dharma. It was the dharma for him to fight. For as Krishna said, no one kills and no one is killed. Arjuna couldn't see that. It was coming from the standpoint of an ayani. While Krishna was the ultimate jnani. Krishna didn't have to fight. Yet Krishna is the battle, and yet is free of the battle at the same time. But Arjuna was not evolved that way. It was therefore his duty to fight. That's why when I speak of ultimate compassion, and I tell you a realized person has ultimate compassion, I'm not referring to you feeling sorry for someone. To many people, that's what compassion means. To feel sorry for someone. Of course, you should help everyone. But if you have an ultimate compassion, it is again because you are the universe. And whatever you do to anyone else, you're doing to yourself. That's the ultimate compassion. When you realize this truth, what you do to others, you do to yourself. When you give yourself away, that's the greatest thing you can ever do. By giving yourself away, I mean when you stop being concerned about your petty things in your life that you think are so important, as if you're the only one that ever went through that experience. Forget about yourself and become the epitome of ultimate compassion. Where you are in the world but not of the world. In other words, your real nature is consciousness. And all the images of the world, the planets, people, places, things, appear to be superimposed on your consciousness. Then you treat everything like you would treat yourself, with respect, with compassion, with love, with joy. Because you understand there's only one self, and you are that. When you walk around thinking, I am self-realized, and I can do everything I like or anything I want, nothing matters. I can hurt people, steal from people, cheat people, beat up people, scream at people. You're making a big mistake. For you are indirectly doing it all to yourself. As I explained once before, because of the delusion of time and space, what you do to others does not appear to come back to you at the same time. It's like when you step on the end of a rake, the handle hits you on the head. Stepping on the rake is the cause, and the effect is the handle hits you on the head. Only many of the things we do is spread out over time. It's like stepping on the end of the rake, and then time passes, maybe 10 years. Then the handle hits you on the head. so it is with us. That's why, as I told you many times before, to get into the teachings of the Absolute Reality is not for everyone. Most people make a big mistake and they think it gives them freedom. It gives them license to do whatever they like. And they suffer uncontrollably. I once knew a man who practiced yoga for many years. And he was a very kind person. And then he found a book by Nisargadatta Maharaj. And he said, "This makes perfect sense to me. I've now found myself." He was a chef in a restaurant in San Francisco. As soon as he believed he found himself, he quit his job. He went home and told his wife. He quit. He's now self-realized, and he's just going to sit and do nothing. His wife had to go to work. A year passed. They spent all their savings because she didn't make enough. She finally left him. He had to file for bankruptcy. He got thrown out of his house for not paying his rent. And the last I heard of him is he became completely disillusioned and claimed the spiritual life doesn't work. It's a bunch of hogwash. That's not a word he used, but I won't use the word. So it is with us. Do not falsely believe that you have realized. To realize is actually different than anything you can ever imagine. It's totally different. We're using semantics when we use words realized, awakened, moksha, liberated. They're just words, words, words. And they're really meaningless. When you awaken, you will just realize that you've never been asleep. There's no past. There's no future. You're fully alive, but not the way you think. This is why most yanis do not teach, because there's nothing to teach. And there's nothing to say. When I talk to you, I try to use the simplest of words. But there's nothing profound about the teaching. There are some people who think they have to hear only profound messages. They're very complex and very hard for people to understand. They believe that's the way. But the truth is, reality is simplicity itself. You have gotten yourself out of the way, and now you're shining forth in all your splendor. Your mind is quiet, thoughts hardly come. You have become the universe. But there are no words to describe it. That's why you must begin your spiritual practice as soon as you wake up in the morning. Do not concern yourself with what someone else is doing. Do not turn your TV on as soon as you get out of bed. Or grab a cup of coffee. Or read a newspaper. That spoils your day. But rather ask yourself, who am I? Am I my body? Who was I when I was sleeping? Who was I when I was dreaming? Who am I now? Who is the I I'm referring to? I cannot be my body, for my body has certain desires and has its own mind. My body mind doesn't ask me permission when it becomes hungry. It doesn't ask my permission when it wants a drink of water. It doesn't ask my permission when I catch a cold. Therefore, how can I be the body? The body must be something else. And if it is, who am I? You never answer the question. You simply take time out. You can still lie in bed or sit down someplace. To simply, gently, in a relaxed way, ask yourself, who am I? Who am I? You will notice as you keep asking yourself the question, your mind begins to slow down. The thinking process begins to slow down every time you ask yourself the question, who am I? Who am I? You can do this for about 10 minutes. Do not look for an answer. That's the worst thing you can do. I after about 10 minutes. Forget about it. And go do whatever you usually do. You will find that you have become happier. You feel more peaceful. The things that usually disturb you in the morning no longer do. You find an inner strength that you never knew you possessed to carry you through the day. And during the day you remind yourself again and again, who am I? Who am I? You continue asking the question without looking for an answer. If you do this, you will notice during the day that the world has less and less power over you to disturb you. You will find yourself becoming more compassionate, more gentle, loving people more and more, even those you despised in the beginning. And as the weeks pass, a profound peace will come over you. You will forget about being self-realized and wonder if you are or not. You will stop thinking about those things. They will not even enter your mind. Instead, you will keep asking yourself, who am I? Who am I? The day will finally come when you find out who you really are. You will know. Your I will disappear. You will disappear. You will then understand that you've always been consciousness. You always will be consciousness. There's nothing but consciousness, which is called the self, and I am that. Thank you. Any questions?
Not a question, but this happiness just listening.
Excuse me?
It's not a question, but there's just happiness. There's happiness just listening.
Yes.
Can you speak about prayer a little bit? I'm praying. Who's praying, and who am I praying to?
If you cannot do anything else, praying is good. In the beginning, you're praying for some type of anthropomorph for God, some God up in the sky. Now that's good to an extent, because you're telling God all your troubles. And you'll feel better after you let it out. It's like going to a psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist says, lie down over here, while he or she sits down and starts taking notes, and doesn't say a word. By the time the bell rings and your time is up, you've told the psychiatrist all your problems and you feel great. When you leave the office after paying $100 or so, You say, what a great psychiatrist. Praying to God is the same thing.
It's cheaper.
It's cheaper, right? Not really, because you think you have to give God a donation. Like in church.
What about all the Iraqis that are praying to God to get rid of us? You know, I mean, they say that they've got God on their side and we've got technology on our side. So, you know, if they're praying to God and God doesn't answer them by destroying us, is God bad?
That's really funny, because Hussein was a secular person. And yet today I watched the TV, was on his knees on the carpet praying to Allah. He never seemed to have prayed before. But anyway, prayer is good if you cannot do anything else. For as you keep praying over and over again, emptying yourself out, you will finally ask yourself, to whom have I been praying? And you will realize eventually that there's only one. God cannot be apart from me. And you will start to believe that God is within yourself. So you'll start to pray to yourself. If you do that long enough, you'll finally come to the conclusion that I am that. There's no God within myself, for God is all there is. When I use the term God, I'm referring to consciousness, same thing. And there's nothing to pray about, because for me to pray, there has to be a subject and an object. I am praying to somebody. But really, there's no subject and there's no object. There's only ultimate oneness. As you become self-realized that way, everything happens by itself. So prayer is good in the beginning. If you cannot do anything else, pray your heart out. It will do you good. Can't hurt. Again, until the day comes when you don't have to. Does that sort of answer your question?
Along that same line, when you feel joyful and feel thankful, to whom are we being thankful?
To yourself. You have to understand that no one exists but yourself. And the whole universe is the self.
So we're thanking ourselves for seeing beauty when we see beauty?
Well, what you're doing, your ego is at work, of course. It is your ego who sees, it is your ego who prays. Therefore, your ego sees beauty, and your ego prays for salvation. You're doing it to yourself.
Earlier you said something like you die and then you take this vacation and you see your relatives and then you're drawn back into a body. But if there's no us, who's drawn back into a body?
Your ego.
So our ego lives after death?
Nope.
After our body dies?
You believe that. Remember, as long as you believe that you are the body-mind, then God exists, realization exists, the world exists, people exist, everything exists.
It isn't enough just to believe that it doesn't exist, you have to know that.
You have to become aware of yourself. Then you'll see a completely different picture. But as long as your heart still desires or wants or needs, realize that's your ego that does that. It is your ego that wants to be righteous, that needs to pray to God. And again, there's nothing wrong with praying to God, as I said, if that's where you're at and that's what you have to do, then by all means do it. It's better than doing nothing. The day will come when you realize I and my Father are one. If you have seen me, you've seen the Father. And you'll know that you are yourself all the time. There's no one else. When I say yourself, I'm not referring to you as a person. I'm referring to you as consciousness, as ultimate reality. You have been yourself all the time. You didn't know it. Now you know, and you're awake. Until that happens, you have to do what you have to do. If you have to pray, pray. There's no such thing as being above or below. An awakened person has no preferences. Because they've got no ego. Also, that's what I mean when I say, watch yourself. Be mindful. It all starts when you get up in the morning. See what you go through in your mind. Observe your feelings. Catch yourself. Do nothing past your nose. When your thoughts start running rampant, catch them. Ask yourself, to whom do these thoughts come? Who's thinking this? I am. Then who am I? Then you stop. Just by saying, who am I, again, you will notice your mind slows down. And as you keep saying, who am I, over and over again, you become calmer and calmer. Your mind becomes quieter and quieter. All of a sudden you acquire good feelings, peace, and happiness. It's all very simple. Try not to make it too complicated.
If it's your dharma to be a warrior, can you be a yani and also kill?
Yes. But I don't want to get into that.
Okay. It's just a side thing. I had like Guru Gobind Singh in mind, the last of the tendency gurus. But also, what of the divine madman? Does he follow the dharma?
When you read a book like that, he's a very unusual person. For him, there's no dharma. He's gone beyond that. But it's so unusual that we can't even discuss it. Never think that you can emulate them.
It's not a matter of emulation. The question is that the Yani always follows the Dhamma, and I'm just trying to follow that through.
Yes. He is following the Dhamma by doing what he does.
Yeah, I mean, my understanding for the divine madman is that he was in an isolated circumstance, and the things that he did was only for the people that were at hand, not for the people at large. So we should not take that as an example.
That is correct. He was following that Dhamma at that time. It was necessary.
So even if you're a warrior or a divine madman, still you don't deviate from the Dharma.
No, you don't. Again, it sounds like a contradiction.
Because after all, even if you're a warrior, if in your physical slaying, you're not slaying within your heart, where's the slaying?
Exactly. No one slays and no one is slain. But again, it's difficult for most of us to understand this.
Well, say for instance, like the Kung Fu masters, that's a perfect example, because they were studying Chan Buddhism, they were studying non-duality, they were the epitome of compassion, yet they had great physical strength and they used it to protect people, mm-hmm. to kill if they had to, so I think that's a good example.
As I always mention, you never want to hurt anybody in any way. If you have the slightest amount of enlightenment, there are things that we don't understand in some of the books we read. It's beyond us. We shouldn't even try to understand it. We should be content with working on ourselves. And when we awaken, will understand, for there are no adequate words to describe those things.
Yeah, I remember reading one of Ramana's books how he said that you should be so intent on working on yourself, on seeing your own imperfections, that you don't have time to see the imperfection of someone else.
Exactly. For the person with the biggest ego, when they read a book like that, within 2 hours they'll believe they're like that also. And go out and cause problems for the world. And of course they'll wind up suffering themselves ultimately.
Would be such a peaceful person. And well, I feel once in a while I'm in touch with something, and I get very excitable. Just the idea that, well, maybe I'm just, it's all concepts probably yours, but I get so excited over it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a real high, you know? Maybe that's just that's ego again.
That is ego. Due to the fact the real state of awakening does not make you excited at all. A big calmness comes over you, a great calmness, a great peace.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Do you think that it would be typical that people would have nirvikalpa states, rising of nirvikalpa states, temporary states of merging, but it not being self-realization prior to awakening?
That's possible, yes. As long as you don't confuse both of them.
Right.
People have awakened from nirvikalpa samadhi. But people have awakened from nothing at all.
But some people strive for nirvikalpa samadhi as if that were the goal itself.
Well, striving for that is better than striving for a hot dog.
But I suppose actually nirvikalpa samadhi is only incidental.
It is, but it helps. It's a good goal to strive for. For when you achieve that, something within yourself will tell you there's something higher. Most people who strive for nirvikalpa think that's the highest state. But when they achieve it, something within will say there's a higher state.
With nirvikalpa, there's still someone left?
Yes, because when you're in nirvikalpa, you merge. But then you come out of it and you're back in the world.
But not sahaja samadhi.
Sahaja samadhi, you're totally emerged.
That's finished.
24 hours a day. There's no coming and going.
The ironic thing about nirvikalpa samadhi is that actually, the Tarpura Rahasya goes into quite detail about nirvikalpa samadhi.
Yeah.
And it goes to say how we continually experience nirvikalpa samadhi daily, but we don't recognize it. And almost as if to say how Ramana would say that realization is our very nature, but it's the idea that we're not realized that we have to get rid of. So it's always there, even nirvikalpa samadhi. We continually experience, but we don't recognize it. It's usually in dramatic states of emotional experience.
This is quite true.
Right. So it's not so mystical.
Nothing is really mystical.
Right. I mean, rather than
we make it mystical.
To think that one needs strive for nirvikalpa samadhi. I mean, after all, you're just striving toward your very state that you are. Your natural state.
Some people awaken. Some people have to go through all kinds of things. But again, as you mentioned before, forget about others.
Right.
Focus on yourself. And then you'll automatically love everybody. Without exception.
The Christians put such emphasis on this mystical experience. But actually, it seems to be nothing out of the ordinary.
Everybody has mystical experiences once in a while. It's like Sai Baba, for instance. I was mentioning before that Sai Baba, when he was a little kid, used to materialize candy bars for the other kids in school. But there's nothing special about that. It's just his karma. It has nothing to do with realization. Mystical powers, occult powers, have absolutely nothing to do with realization. This is why it is written in the Upanishads that to acquire occult powers is a curse. For you get stuck at that level for many incarnations, maybe thousands and thousands, before you get out of it. As you work on yourself, occult powers come to some people, but you have to bypass it. The goal is to become fully realized, not to develop any powers. You have to go right by it and leave it alone. It's like the story of the person who was invited to the king's house to share the kingdom. But on the way to the king's house, he was driving his car, and there was about 20 acres of land before he got to the house. He saw beautiful dancing girls and flowers and all kinds of beautiful things. He got out of his car and he forgot about the king, and he became immersed in the things. Whereas if he went straight to the king, he would have shared in the kingdom. But he got waylaid by the beauty he saw and fascinated, so he stood there for a long time and forgot all about the king. So it is with us. As we go forward to self-realization, we'll experience all kinds of things, mentally and physically. We'll think that's it. We'll forget our goal. That's a mistake. No matter how beautiful things become, no matter what you acquire, realize that that's not the goal. And go right past it and become free.
It was that instant gratification that hangs you up.
It sure does. But you know it, don't do it.
It was false.
People with cities being trapped in many incarnations, and I had heard the same thing about suicide. Recently I was reading a book on near-death experiences, and it was at the end of the book where they had questions about suicide, and they didn't really relate to the near-death experiences, because most near-death experiences were accidents and people weren't trying to take their own life, whereas in the case of suicide, something completely different, although the guy that wrote the book did have some data on it. And apparently the people that he interviewed that did come back, that attempted suicide and did come back, commented, they thought, perhaps the reason why they attempted the suicide was because they were so frustrated with the world, with their problems, they wanted to get rid of their problems. But being in that state, they found that they weren't any different at all, that the problems were still there, and they suddenly realized that they had made a tremendous mistake. And when they and then they came back, and so it was kind of like what you were saying earlier, when you leave this state, this consciousness, you're really no different than you are now. So the idea is not to try to go beyond this, but to find realization within this.
That's very true. Forget about suicide and forget about the material world. Focus on the self and become free.
So the people who take their lives to avoid painful deaths live on in painful death.
What do you want to get involved in that for? Instead of thinking about things like that,
well,
think about who you are. But you have no idea what they're going through and where they're at.
Yeah.
Save your own life and find yourself. Be concerned with that. When you're in a burning building, you do not stop to admire the pictures on the wall. You get out as fast as you can. So while you still have your life, find a realization and become free.
Is it that bad for us, Robert? Are we all in burning buildings?
Ask yourself. Most people are. Which means they're stopping to admire the pictures on the wall. So these people admire life as it appears. They get involved in the world and worldly things. And then they become old and they become disillusioned, disappointed. Then they die and they have to go through it again and again and again. Forget about those things. Ask yourself, who am I? Become free and liberated in this life.
The ego is not real, yet when you die, that's what comes back. So how can that be so?
Due to the fact you have not become realized. As long as you're not realized.
That's the ego does not become realized. If the ego is not real, how can it become realized?
Because that's the illusion.
Who's illusion?
Your illusion, the ego's illusion. The ego feels that it has to come back again and again until it finds itself. But that's all an illusion. It doesn't exist. But as long as you identify with it, it's true for you.
But if the illusion is not real and it doesn't exist, how can it be taken to be real?
Due to the fact that it exists in all planes. It exists on the causal plane, on the mental plane, on the physical plane, on all the planes. It's all an illusion. It doesn't exist at all. But it appears like that. So as long as you believe that you are the body right now, and you can tell if you believe that by the way you react to things, then that's all true for you. See, you can say, I don't believe I've got an ego, and then get angry, and get upset, and get bothered. For it's the ego that does all that. So when that ego dies, it continues. In other words, if you believe in the body, why should there be only one body? Then there are many bodies. The body keeps coming back again and again and again. Until you get rid of the idea that you are the body. And when you do that, the ego is gone. At that time, there's no coming and there's no going. You're free. So to answer your question, the ego appears to do all that, but it's an appearance. It's an appearance as long as you believe that you're the body.
As long as it believes it's the body.
I say you, because I refer to the ego as you.
What you're saying, calling ego, is this collection of reactions of like anger,
a collection of some scars,
anger, fear, greed.
All that makes you come back again and again.
That's the like aggregates of the ego.
Yes.
It's sort of like a accumulation of modules of energy that are connected together somehow.
That's called some scars.
Well, that's what you get your sense of self from.
Right? Yes.
At your storehouse.
From past lives.
Did you say scars, Robert?
Some scars.
What?
It's a Sanskrit word, some scars.
Like engrams.
Impressions.
Mental impressions from past lives.
Memories.
Memories, impressions, a mixture of everything.
Tendencies.
Yes, all that stuff.
Robert, you know, John was just talking about things that sort of constitute, make the ego, but he sort of mentioned negative things, but it's also all the positive things too, isn't it?
What do you mean?
Well, anything that we could call, I could say that's me, would also be, you know, negative and positive.
Oh, yes, of course.
It wouldn't just, you know, because we say ego like it's a bad thing, but it's also what makes up the good thing too, isn't it?
Yes, it's all ego.
Yeah, but the negative
compassion would be that too?
human compassion.
The negative is the positive. Well, I'm just saying, you just said anger, greed, hatred, but it's also...
Because love and hate are connected.
Yeah.
They're twins.
That's what I was just saying.
Well, they're all connected.
The whole thing's got to go. Everything's got to go.
If there's someone being compassionate, why then?
The someone's got to go.
Yeah. It's still a hang-up. Compassion's a hang-up.
The whole ball of wax has to go.
Someone who's being?
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. It isn't really compassion.
We think it's compassion.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the subtotal of all this is like, we wouldn't even be here anymore when you get to that place. That
sure you
sounds
would.
Like there wouldn't be a
place. Where would you be?
What's the point?
You'd last really be here.
There's nowhere to go.
Where's you?
You just are.
Where are these
samskaras? Where are they? They're you.
Where?
They comprise your entire being.
Where are they?
Everywhere.
The
no, they're all over you.
What if I'm not here? What if I'm alive? Where are they?
Then why ask about the samskaras? Oh, you mean if you died and the way you are?
Yeah.
You carry it over in your ego.
But where are the samskaras? Where
in your ego.
Live?
In your ego.
Where is that?
Nowhere.
Lives nowhere.
It doesn't even exist. But as long as you believe it exists, then there's such a thing as ego. It's a mental state.
So it's on the mental plane.
Yes. Also on the causal plane and every plane. But it has no shape. It cannot be described. Because
it's
not...
It
has relationships. It's an impression. It's not a thing. It's an impression. And it's a lie. For what is it?
If the mind gives everything reality, as we were saying earlier, everything exists because we perceive it to exist, in the sense we give it reality, we become a part of it. If we know nothing of these concepts and planes, where the ego is, where it resides, that type of thing. Say, for instance, like an aborigine or something like that. How do these things come to him? How does he survive? How does he transmigrate, even if he has no idea of these concepts?
He's part of the collective unconscious. There's a collective unconscious in the universe. And we're all part of it.
So is that like almost like another form of karma? You know, they sanchit karma, and then, as you're saying, collective consciousness, which is another form of karma that we are subject to.
Correct. It's all karma.
Right.
That's why when you feel out of sort sometime, and there's no reason to feel out of sort, you're picking up the unconscious vibration of the human race. You're turning into it.
Would you think it's advantageous to get away from the bombardment of the messages that are constantly, like, you know, the war messages are today's message, but, you know, there's always sort of a malaise that's being programmed, you know, by society. Would you think it's advantageous to not be surrounded by that for certain periods of time? If you could, I guess that's a matter of karma.
For some people, the truth is, wherever you go, you got to take yourself. And if you haven't found peace in the world, you will not find anywhere else.
So the message of that's being given these days is really coming from us and not from outside in a certain sense.
That's right. Because you are the self. And everything comes out of your mind. Remember, the whole universe is a projection of your mind. You keep creating and creating and creating all these things. All the worlds and universes. You do it yourself. There's only you.
consider us in the field of this collective
response. You can feel it in the city, like for instance a rush hour when the traffic gets heavy, mm-hmm. the vibration, how it changes, the tension in the air, or in the evening when people have gone home, it starts to calm down a bit. And the on mm-hmm. Sundays, sometimes when they go to church, it seems to get calm for a while because everybody's backed off for a few minutes.
That is true, but you have to ask yourself, to whom does it come? Who feels calm sometimes in a certain time and feels upset at other times?
I'm not referring to myself feeling that way. I'm referring to the feeling like you walk into a place with real heavy vibes, you can feel the vibes, the feeling of the sensations there. It's the same in the city when it's really hectic.
You can, I agree. But who does the feeling? Who feels? In other words, what I'm saying is, if I feel certain feelings at a certain time of the day, good or bad, I have to realize that I am feeling those feelings. Who am I? You always go back to who am I.
You know, that plane that just went by overhead, they're going to be hearing of the plane and no comment, but there will be nobody involved in it.
Exactly.
So then they can be hearing or they can be experiencing things without an experience of it.
Exactly. That's right.
The experiencing of things without an experiencer?
He means that you can see something and hear something, but not feel it.
Not feel it. Like touch or?
No, not feel it within. Not have any kind of impression.
No samskaras can be formed in those circumstances.
Exactly. If you do not react to any given condition, then you're not accruing any more karma.
That means an older person who has collected more karma to get rid of.
Why?
Too bad, man.
Well, you can say that, but that's not always true.
When you start measuring.
I know, but that's not always true because a young person may have lived a million lives before, and has to get rid of all that karma. True.
You don't really have to get rid of the karma, just see that it doesn't pertain to anybody. Right?
True.
You'd have to be endless if you had to get rid of it. Just to get rid of it, you'd be making more.
I mean, transcendent.
Like burying your shadow.
The I Am meditation is a very powerful meditation. And I hope we're all practicing it. Because it helps. So let's try it right now. Become comfortable.